Welcome back to Ed Gaines Radio. That is Marv Levy talking about when it going gets tough. Are you going to lie there and whimper? And a lot of those moments of truth were faced by teams this week. I think Tony Romo is trying to decide whether he is going to have to do that with the frustration and the great heartache of what happened at the end of that game. But we're not going to go to that right now. We're going to go to Christine Brennan with some more about tonight's matchup, particularly that wonderful Sports Illustrated jinx, as well as the Heisman jinx itself. Troy Smith, do you think he can handle the hype, the attention, the sense that now he's the world beater? Can he handle this? He's done it all season.
He has, Nick, and I think it's going to be really a testament to Jim Tressel, the coach, and to Troy himself. You know, can he pull it off? Because we know that there is a Heisman jinx, and you're right, an SI jinx as well. I mean, think of Jason White, the Oklahoma quarterback. Terrible game against USC a few years ago down in the Orange Bowl in the national championship game. You go back to Gino Toretta with Miami. You know, Danny Werfel had troubles. Yeah, exactly. And so there is a bit of a Heisman jinx. And, of course, as you and I were chatting earlier, you're a football player. You know this far better than I, covering it all these years. The long layoff. Ohio State last played November 18th. That is a lifetime ago. How do you feel that's going to affect guys like Troy Smith and that Ohio State offense?
Well, the thing is, one of the things we'll talk about in the next few weeks is the fact that I do not like the two-week layoff, just the two-week layoff before the Super Bowl. The Super Bowl has been hurt tremendously, I think, by the perception of lackluster games. More recently, it's been a lot better, but a number of those games were after one-week layoffs. Now you're talking about college with a 50-day layoff. My friend Mike Slive, who was on the show a couple weeks ago, the BCS commissioner, who was my first agent many, many years ago in 1978 coming out of Dartmouth, and we've talked about that. I believe, Christine, that the answer to this, tonight is one step, but the answer is a Final Four. It is reducing that 50-day layoff to maybe 45 days, cutting the schedule a couple days so that kids make sure they do get that education, they do study, they do get some sort of educational experience during the football season. But the bottom line is, if you had Florida and Michigan in one bracket, Ohio State, USC in another, and had those two games be the Final Four leading to the final championship, that adds one more week. That's not irreconcilable to the goals of education and those priorities, but it also, I think, does a lot to end any of this lasting criticism of the process.
Well, and I'd like to see, I think it's a great point you're making, Nick, and I'd like to see the existing bowls be used. I mean, the structure is there. You know, you can have all these other kind of smaller bowls, but to use the big ones, the Rose, the Sugar, the Orange, the Fiesta, the Cotton, if you want, you know, whatever else out there, and use them in some kind of playoff structure, maybe rotate or at least have, you know, some of those big games, almost like the preliminaries, you know, the quarterfinals, and then you pick your four, you know, then you can normally, usually in a season, find four teams you can agree on as the best four, and then have those three extra games, two semifinals and a final. I think we're coming close to that point, although I still love the arguing. I'm kind of old school that way. But, you know, if Ohio State wins tonight, Ohio State's national champ, no doubt about it. I'm sure there'll be some people, Boise State, but not really. But if Florida wins, now you've got several teams with one loss. Florida will be deemed the national champ by the coaches, but you could, you know, the long layoff, Ohio State was so dominant during the regular season, it's almost like we're talking about two different seasons here, isn't it?
Absolutely, and six of these games have been won by the underdog. To look at the specifics before they let you go for today, Florida has a guy named Percy Harvin, number 8, 13.3 yards rushing per play, more than 50 yards per score. Ohio State will have to stop him. That's the speed merchant, if you will. Florida has, as a kicker, it's just amazing to see they've done it as well. If the game comes down to a field goal, they will be in real trouble. And Ohio State, to me, Antonio Pittman, when you establish the run, even if they want to show that they are more than that, and Troy Smith has done that, Ohio State needs to establish the run with Antonio Pittman.
Well, I think you're right. You know, Ohio State does a great job of spreading it out. So does, you know, Chris Leak in Florida. I mean, these are offensive, you know, firepower teams. It's going to be fun to watch. I think it's going to be like 35-31. I'll go out on a limb and say Ohio State wins it. But it's going to be one of those games where the turnover, the break here or there, the great defensive stop by an Ohio State defense or Florida defense, both quite good. But the key is always quarterbacks. You know, Leak and Troy Smith. Who outperforms the other? Who gets the ball into those incredible playmakers' hands? Dallas Baker and his gang, this incredible group of Florida threats on the wideouts, as well as Ohio State, which we saw so that they did so well to open up the middle against Michigan. They got it, you know, had all those guys on the wide side of the field one way or the other, and then we're able to bust up the middle for long, long gains in the running game against Michigan. Spreading it out, I think, is really the key to this game for both teams.
And my final issue in the game is because of that poor field goal record of Florida and the fact that Ohio State's red zone defense is tremendous. They've only allowed 9 touchdowns in 35 visits to the red zone. They've created 7 more turnovers. That, to me, says that Florida State will have to kick a number of field goals in this game, and I just don't see it happening. That could be the big issue that gives a structural advantage to Ohio State. Who's your pick in this game?
Well, I'm going to go with Ohio State, and I think you're right. I think, I have pause for thought because of that Rose Bowl and because of how Michigan just, you know, disassembled in front of our eyes. But I'm going to go with Ohio State, figuring that Tressel is very different from Lloyd Carr. We've got two great coaches, Urban Meyer and Tressel. This is a great matchup in and of itself, Nick. But I'll say Tressel wins the day, comes up with enough schemes, makes the adjustments at halftime he needs to make. Ohio State, I'm going to say 35, and Florida 31. I'll give them 1 field goal. And then the 4 touchdowns, but I think Ohio State's going to come out 35-31.
My pick is Ohio State 27-17 for the reason that Troy Smith and this Ohio State team, they have so much experience here in Phoenix. They have had a tremendous record. Their coach has a tremendous record in the big games itself, and for that reason, I'll still give them the edge and hopefully put to rest some of those lingering criticisms that the Big Ten does not have speed. Well, we'll look forward to your report tomorrow at the top of the show, and we'll go into more depth about tonight's big-time game. Thank you,
All
sir.
All right, Nick. Hey,
Thank
have
you,
fun.
Ma'am.
Enjoy it. Thanks a lot.
We'll see you tomorrow, Christine. Christine Brennan from USA Today, and we're switching hats to a guy that knows a lot about playoffs, Len Dawson. How depressing was that flight back on Saturday night?
That was ugly, wasn't it? Chiefs performance. I've never seen anything like it, Nick, where in a playoff game it takes you almost 3 full quarters to pick up 1 first down. Completely dominated Kansas City in the early goings of that football game. And they were really lucky it wasn't a lot worse at halftime. It was only 9-0, and they were still, you know, still within reach if they could do anything, but they were not able to do anything in the second half either.
How much of it, and we're going to have Al Saunders join us in the next segment to look at this, and as I talked to Al, he said, you know, it was just so difficult for him, Len Dawson, to see a Chiefs offense that had so much innovation, so much energy, and certainly the Chiefs have every right to have changed their philosophy and have had great success with Larry Johnson, but did they have too much confidence that Larry Johnson was the only answer?
Well, evidently, because they didn't alter their game plan. I mean, the first quarter or into the second quarter, if things are not working, change it. Do something different because what you're doing is not working. And they really didn't alter their game plan that much. They did have some drop passes in the early going that were crucial at that particular time because they would have picked up some first downs and kept a drive alive. But I guess what could go wrong did go wrong. They get an interception by Ty Law. And he takes it to the 9-yard line. First play is a 7-yard run. Now it's second and goal from the 2. They don't make it on second down. Then on third down, a running play, Brian Waters steps back with his right foot, steps on top of Trent Green's left foot.
How much was that his fault, or was that Trent's fault for not being aware and careful about that?
I don't know. I can't answer that. I know that I don't know what the blocking was, whether that was what Brian Waters was going to do, take a step back and help out or something. I don't know, but it was a killer. If that's the case, then you stagger your feet as a quarterback. You put that left foot back when you're under the center, so even if he does step back, your foot is away from him, so he can't step
on it. Did
you
do that?
Get the handoff. I don't know if thing would have been successful anyway, but the thing is, it sure didn't give him a chance.
When we come back, we're going to talk with Len Dawson some more and also have Al Saunders. Talk to us about the interesting phenomenon of making sure your starting quarterback has the confidence, knows that he's the guy, if that is an issue. But also, to me, the issue that it's always about winning the game. In fact, that was the title of Herman Edwards' book, You Play to Win the Game. We're going to talk about that and more going to the Dallas game, the slicker kicker ball phenomenon, the Philly victory, and more. On Head Games Radio. We'll be right back in just a second with Len Dawson and Al Saunders, and in a few more minutes, Merrill Hodge from ESPN. Stay with us on Sports Byline and Sirius XM.